Good evening. You are tuned to KGVM Bozeman, Gallatin Valley Community Radio. We're at 95.9 on the FM dial, kgvm.org, online. And it is time now for the local musician spotlight. And we're doing things a little bit differently this time. We're actually recording ahead of time, and we're not in the KGVM studios. We're out at Basecamp Recording Studios. I'm here with Story Hill, Chris and Johnny. Thanks for having me out here today.
Yeah, glad you're here. Thanks, Bob.
Yeah, and I think I was looking back. I was out here almost 2 years ago,
right.
And it was 2 years and 2 weeks, I think. Mm. And I think I was here because you had just released an album called Bethlehem, and I think we're 2 years minus 1 week from the release date of that album.
Uh-huh. So, that sounds about right.
So I got to hear some of that stuff hot off the presses for sure. And I think we're going to kind of take a look back on that. It is the season.
Right.
But I wonder if I was trying to remember back, and you guys have been performing together for quite some time now.
Hmm.
And I think I found maybe you did your first album in 89 as mm-hmm. Chris and Johnny, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Story Hill came along.
That's right.
A little while later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, we went to Peak Recording here in Bozeman and recorded with Gil Stober.
Yeah, we were teenagers with a bunch of songs from our high school years.
Yeah, and we were going our separate ways, so our parents were gifted us, I guess they each paid for a day in the studio. And it was really just to kind of catalog what we had done together as high school students and before we went our separate ways.
Yeah.
And then, it kind of all came together. And I remember Chris was in Spain when I got the cassettes when it came time to send them to get printed. And I was like, oh, who are we? What do we call ourselves? And
Sonny and Cher.
I could reach you, or maybe I could, but I was like, nah, Chris and Johnny sounds better than Johnny and Chris.
Yeah.
and you wrote up a little cover and
drew the guitar down at Kinko's, right?
Right. Yep. And then we only ordered 100 copies because we were just going to give them away to family and stuff. And we must not have been able to give them all away because I had most of them when I went to St. Olaf. And I ended up playing some solo shows and sold out of them. And then realized this would be a good place for Chris to come so we could, play.
Yeah, he makes some more. Like he sent me an air mail. Remember that stuff?
Yeah.
A letter.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, swing on by. You're so psyched about being at St. Olaf that you're using words like, this place is so, rad. Everybody's, I'm psyched about it. You would be psyched about it. And he convinced me to swing, to come visit. And at St. Olaf College, and I did that. We played, met some friends. Everybody wanted to hear the, harmony part. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then one thing led to another. I applied and was accepted somehow.
And then we ended up getting a steady gig at this bar called The Rube in town. It was the only bar in town.
Rubenstein Pub.
Yeah, that's kind of where we cut our teeth and learned, I guess, because we had to play 4 hours a night on Thursdays and Sundays.
Oof.
And we wanted to have a lot of variety, so we had to learn a lot of songs and write a lot.
Yeah, so that was kind of the genesis of a lot of songwriting. Huh?
Right, yep.
Nice.
Yeah, and the discipline of it, because we ended up recording a new album every year.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's when it switched into CD mode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Bethlehem is your new. Well, I guess you've got a recording that you put out after that live recording.
We did an exclusive kind of live thing from our Story Hill Fest this year.
Yeah.
But no, as far as a bigger official release, Bethlehem's it, and then we're working on our next one.
Next one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so Bethlehem is a holiday album, and there are, I guess there are two or maybe three traditional Christmas songs on there, but the arrangements of them, I certainly think are not traditional, really very interesting arrangements. And, just I thought it was a pretty fresh take on some of those songs, like Silent Night.
Mm, yeah.
But
which we just started jamming in the studio, mm-hmm. and one thing led to it. So it took some time to get a feel for like how to play that song.
Yeah.
It's tough to do Silent Night. You know, it's been done.
It is. Yeah, but you know, like I said, you listen to it, it's like, oh yeah, I know what this song is. But on one hand, I guess I kind of know what this song is, but when I start listening to it, I do not. You know, yeah. I don't know where it's going next.
Uh-huh.
So, which is cool. Yeah. That, you know, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So when you guys started working on that album, you knew that you were going to do a holiday album?
Yeah, it was our manager's idea, and he pressed us on it for years, and we were like, no way. We're going to do a Christmas album or a holiday.
Well, it was record. So difficult to find songs that we would both want to do
right.
that weren't already overdone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the whole, like, is it a sacred record or is it, like, you know, because we're not interested in Santa Claus kind of
right.
stuff.
Right. Yeah. The commercialism part.
But at the same time, we struggle with... you know, the way that organized religion is kind of, I guess, distorted the message of, you know, it's hard to find songs on, you know, Christian radio, for example, that are about serving the poor, helping the needy and stuff. And it's almost impossible, actually, which doesn't make any sense because that's really all that Jesus talked about.
Right. That's a pretty potent irony.
Yeah.
Just what has happened with it seems I'm on the outside looking in, so maybe I'm overgeneralizing, but trying to understand kind of what's happened with organized religion. And
yeah,
you know, I look at it sometimes and I'm like, I as an atheist, it sometimes seems like I understand more about Christianity than some of the
right.
stuff that I hear.
Yeah.
Which kind of boggles my mind. So,
well, in a lot of ways, this record is an outside looking in or taking another look at it.
Yeah. And sort of a maybe like we struggled a lot, I mean, to say the least, with the language and finding language that we were comfortable with. Like, we left some of the stuff in. But like for me, the word for God that we use, the Lord, is just such a terrible. It doesn't.
Yeah.
The words that it's replacing, there's, you know, 30 some words in the Old Testament for God, and they're all way more descriptive and way less patriarchal and defining in that kind of human way, you know.
Right.
So as an example we switched the Lord wherever we could or wherever it felt right to Elohim, which is actually the word that is in there. So it's sort of like, why did you change from this word that means, I can't even remember what Elohim means, but it's sort of like describes an aspect of God, or like Emmanuel is God with us.
And the original Aramaic meanings are
just
richer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just to see what happens when you replace these kind of words that we've grown sort of tired of, or they've started to mean, you know, they only come out of the mouths of people that we tend to disagree with, or, you know,
right.
dogmatic kind of stuff. How do you explore these themes that are just so powerful coming from way long ago about the community supporting itself and,
right.
and welcoming strangers and saving corner of your field for the people that need the food that so they can come and pick it up, and
taking a little bit of ownership about, you know, the world, you know, the people around us that need, you know, like the social justice issues. We've got a few songs about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So on the one hand, I feel like we're kind of like talking to the sort of churchgoers in a way, as a way of, I mean, I guess it feels like important to remind people of where all this stuff comes from. And really to dig into those translations and find other ways of bringing out what it's actually saying, as opposed to, you know, what we've sort of, or the powers that be have decided it's saying to keep us in our place, you know.
It's hard
to explain it because it's like you know, it feels like we're a little bit in between things where we're not necessarily giving the sort of church-going crowd what they want because it's not the traditional stuff, and it does push some envelopes
right.
and we've changed some text and stuff to reflect a little bit more openness and stuff.
It's not a ton of praise,
right? But then we also worry about people, you know, who are atheists or not interested right. in that stuff at all, just kind of sitting there
turning it off,
you know, like, or yeah. imagining that we're trying to convert them or something. Right. It was just not at all what we're doing.
I always find that really interesting too. You know, I certainly know people that are, it's like, if it's Christian music, it's like, oh, I just will not listen to it. I'm like, mm-hmm. I mean, you'll listen to Led Zeppelin sing about Norse gods and not, and it's right, fine. Yeah. It's like, it's material that you wrote a song around, and
yeah.
I don't have to believe in Norse gods to appreciate it.
Right.
And I don't have to necessarily believe in the Christian God to appreciate the message or just to enjoy the songs either. But there seems to be this kind of weird block there about Christianity in this country.
Yeah.
And, I mean, maybe not just this country. And I think, like, when you were talking about the changes where maybe the word got changed to Lord and stuff, and just thinking back, I mean, it's happened so long ago that it's easy for us. And it happened in a place that I think a lot of us in America don't understand that history and stuff. But just remembering how this stuff all got, like, these different lenses and forces applied to it. And the force that was political that got mashed together for so long in Europe with the religious force, mm-hmm. you know, and I would guess, not being a linguist or anything, but there's a lot of the reason why the Lord became that was had a lot to do with feudal politics.
Probably.
And, yeah. So, and to, you know, it's just kind of fascinating to me that, you know, people get hung up on these things and can't get around them and just get back to kind of the original ideas.
Right.
But, you know, I don't care who you are. If you have a problem with the idea that, you know, we should be good to each other and
right.
help the less fortunate and stuff, it's like, that's something that maybe you should go off and work on a yeah. little bit, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah, for sure. It's, yeah, Chris was just talking about how, I mean, it's a language, there are these sort of truths under there that just resonate, and especially if you recognize the language over the top of it is just symbols. You yeah. know, and it's not going to ever get, you know, to the meat of it all. It is only sort of pointing and it's always going to be culturally biased, you know.
Right.
But that doesn't mean we should scrap it. I mean, the book of Isaiah is the one that we've mainly drawn from in this because it's, you know, it tends to be, it has a lot of stuff about and the anticipation of, you know, waiting for the Messiah or waiting for God to connect with us. You know, you could see it that way. But it has all these, I guess my explanation for why people have turned really against kind of Christianity is because of, I mean, I just feel like that's what happens when, well, in Europe, it's because the state kind yeah. of and the church were combined and people just, that just doesn't work, you know? So it went away there quick. And then here it's just, yeah, I think the aligning with the political stuff and forgetting about the main message of yeah. Emptying ourselves and being servants, you know, and that to us, yeah, it's like this powerful thing that's buried in this controversial text. And we're trying to kind of like bring it out in a way that's like, this is what it's really saying here. It's not, doesn't, you know, power is this, not that.
Not that,
you know?
Yeah.
And that's why the lowly stuff and the idea and the Bethlehem name actually kind of came out of that because of the whole, all the images of the, you know, the donkeys and the, there's no room in the inn. And, yeah. you know, that's how God decides, you know, it's actually a pretty amazing, if you just look at it objectively, it's like, what a weird thing, this God that comes as a child and there's no room, like the world yeah. does not want not this child and then the world, you know, ends up killing this child, you know. And so it's just a fascinating to me story about this struggle and relationship with why we're here and who God is and is God there. And yeah,
music has the power, I think, to, or can have the power to make people maybe open up their minds a little bit to that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. For some reason, you know, I think it helps when it comes with music, it helps kind of open your mind up to accepting things. So
I think so. Mm-hmm. One thing that occurs to me is that it might be just as simple as, like when you're singing, you're saying things way slower usually than when you're speaking.
Yeah.
And then music kind of fills in your, brain's need for something to do
right
during the time, and you're kind of, it's just sort of like a, it's like really is always almost always like slowing down in terms of like information coming in, you know what I mean? Yeah. And I think that,
well, and that's that's part of what I think is the nature of this record is more contemplative. Like you get that chance to, and even when we've been performing them, performing Bethlehem concerts, we've done a handful, and we've been asking usually for people to just hold their applause kind of thing, and just and just kind of follow us with, follow the arc of the presentation, because it does follow an arc.
Yeah.
In this case.
You stay in the flow.
Yeah.
And the story's in there, and because we like looked at like, what are we gonna, how do you introduce these songs or whatever, and it's like, well, the best way is just to like the song before it kind of
introduces
the best one.
That's, I imagine that's kind of hard. I mean, we're just conditioned, right? When you go to a concert, it's like when the song gets done, you clap.
Yeah.
It's just what you do. And so it's hard enough to just get people to sit there and be quiet and listen during the song, much less to kind of let things flow through.
Well, that's kind of a big ask.
But interestingly, the streaming stuff that kind of came to the fore with COVID over the last couple of years has been kind of an interesting surprise, where there's that kind of new way of performing where you're performing, but no one's actually there. And so they're not responding in real time and in a way that you can hear or that everybody hears and feeds off each other and stuff. And it, for us, it's kind of led us into a, I mean, we really kind of like the new format in a way, you know, like as a, you know, in addition to playing live, we like the interaction, of course, but there's something pretty awesome about no applause after.
So you can kind of, you have a lot more control over the flow. Mm-hmm. I mean, you miss the, that one guy that's always out there calling for Freebird, but maybe that's not bad.
Well, and our music tends to be, you know, the Story Hill music works best as non-entertainment anyway, for the most part. I mean, we're just sort of ourselves, and we have these songs that hopefully mean something to others, you know, we don't try to force the meaning on them, but and it, like Johnny was saying, it's nice to be in the context of interactive audiences where you feel their excitement and stuff, but at the same time it's also really kind of relaxing to just do your thing and kind of trust that those with people with ears to hear are taking it in and they're drawn to it, but we don't necessarily need to react or sort of like put on a airs or like try to make ourselves conform to some kind of
some kind of a performance standard or something.
Or this is how you should interpret it, what we're doing, and we want to make sure you get exactly what we're
doing.
It's basically kind of like an inside out, like if we're enjoying it, trust that other people
will.
And it's really interesting what happens. There's kind of an energy that builds over time that I guess it's probably just it's a result of like that. It's like meditation, you know. It's like this kind of compounding kind of openness, I guess, that kind of happens when you don't interrupt it with like, "Thanks a lot, thanks."
Right. Thank you. You can get into that space. I'm projecting because I'm not a musician, so I would think that while you're playing, you kind of, I would guess that things, you get into a different headspace, and that when you have to stop and talk to the audience and stuff, that probably is not the same headspace,
right?
So being able to stay there and not have to drop out and switch context and stuff.
I mean, and especially with the Bethlehem thing, that's, we set up that kind of agreement or expectation just before doing it. We'll be doing this show and this sequence of, you know, this album on the 25th of this week.
Friday and night.
It's kind of a big ask, but we're definitely going to play like our own Story Hill.
Yeah, we'll do a whole set of our own stuff, and then
fan favorites or whatever, and like have a good time, and then try to kind of like ease into, okay, well, now we're going to go into this reflective mode, and we'll invite you to just sit back and enjoy the ride.
I wonder if maybe you want to play a couple songs. Maybe talk a little bit more about the show at the Ellen.
Great.
Should we do the one where it's kind of asking the questions?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one is from the book of Esther. Sort of. It's inspired by one line out of there. And that's an interesting book in the Old Testament. God is not mentioned in it. And it's a story about Esther was, I guess, in the harem of King Cyrus. And she was Jewish. And there was another member of the court that wanted to kill all the Jews in the kingdom. And her, I think, uncle was kind of her mentor and stuff, and she was talking to him about what she should do, and he said, could it be that you were born for a time such as this where you need to step up and risk your life to, you know, say that this isn't right and get your husband to change course? And she did. And then it just felt like that theme kind of resonated in it, especially during the sort of pandemic and all that stuff going on, and just like everybody's like crying out for help in various ways, and just realizing that maybe you have it in you, and maybe you're here for the reason you're crying, you know, maybe you're the one that is here to help.
And it's a great way to sing a song is posing questions, mm-hmm. posing this as a question.
Did the day give way to the deafening dark? Did you fear you were alone? Did the rain turn to snow? Did the snow hide the only path you've ever known? Did you wonder who would stand up for you and lead you safely home? Could it be you were called for a time such as this? Could it be? Could it be you were called to be hope for the hopeless, light for the darkness, love for the enemy? So many have mourned, so many have died, so many are still oppressed. Who will bring justice? Who will bring peace? Who will comfort the ones in distress? Was it only your echo you heard when you cried for those lost in the wilderness? Could it be you were called for a time such as this? Could it be? Call to be hope for the hopeless, light for the darkness, love for the enemy. Hope for the hopeless, light for the darkness, love for the enemy.
It's a pretty song and a great message. I hope people listen and think about it.
Mm.
Yeah. That was the hope.
Yeah. Man, we could sure use a lot of awakening of empathy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is the common human language. Really. I mean, it starts with parenting.
Yeah. 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 I don't know. Seems like empathy's taken a beating lately.
Yeah.
People get wrapped up in things and
trying to be right.
Yeah. And you know, you get told often enough that your situation is terrible and stuff. You start believing it. And once you start believing that, it's pretty easy to sink into yourself and
yeah.
Lose that perspective that I think you kind of have to have if you're going to be empathetic.
Mm. Yeah. And there's something about telling, it's like, realizing that you can actually retell your story, or sort of that there might be some storylines going on that are real and not great, you know, like,
yeah.
But there's also other storylines going on that can be sort of inhabited, you know, or yeah. sort of focused on. And
right.
Well, yeah. I like what you said about the empathy thing. Sometimes it's just like so hard to get myself to that. But then when I do, it's like I gain more by trying to reach out and connect with others, and I feel better. And,
right.
You know, and I get unstuck from my own little
right.
mental world. And
yeah, that's the irony. It's like, you know, it's this self-reinforcing thing, and it really is this negative energy just keeps feeding back on itself. And so
yeah, maybe a song like that, you know, can trigger that.
Yeah, yeah.
Or help.
Mm-hmm.
Remind, what do you want to do next?
Yeah, I'm open for whatever.
All right. Well, this is kind of along the lines of, it's not on the Bethlehem album, but could we play a sure. newer song?
It's yeah. actually not on any album yet.
Oh, yeah, really? Yeah, it's in the making.
All right.
Safe Place to Land. Yeah.
So that a candidate for the new album?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have about 10 to 12 in the list so far.
Yeah. I was trying to remember, you recorded Bethlehem here. Or
Yes.
Doing the new album here, I assume.
No, not, we're kind of hoping not to have to do anything other than play.
Yeah.
We're both producers, and we both, so we both recognize the value of having a an outside producer and engineer, maybe even more, you know, just to have somebody to,
you know,
not
and we,
worry about all that stuff.
Right, because with Bethlehem, we did get some help from Luke Sheeler from Jericho for setting up originally.
Yeah.
And then it just felt, it just made sense to keep, you know, trucking on our own. So we just said, we'll call you if we need you.
Right.
But always in the back of your head, you're like, well, maybe it's, you know, like, is, or I'm sure you more than me, because you were running your own rig, but it's like, yeah, is my guitar loud enough? Or is you're just always kind of thinking,
you know, all of those things that don't really help with the
emotional
music,
things, right? the real reason you're doing it.
Right.
Well, we're kind of also looking for more of an outside influence too for this next one.
I talked to a lot of people, and I think that's, I mean, it's great now that people, musicians can do their own album. You know, they can actually get an album that's going to sound good, and they don't have to, you know, take out a third mortgage or sell a child or anything. But I do kind of wonder if what the net effect is of not having somebody who's, and I'm sure that that can go both ways. I'm sure there have been albums made that had producers that ran roughshod over things or put their thumb on the scale maybe more than would have been good. But, you know, so that kind of a happy medium where you get some outside ideas and some suggestions and stuff. And it isn't all kind of just coming from you. It seems like sometimes that's probably good. And I kind of wonder, you know, people that do all of their own, kind of self-produce all their own stuff, if they're, you know, maybe missing out on some opportunity there that might help influence the, you know, the trajectory over a period of time about how albums might get made and stuff.
Yeah, like anything can happen. I think it's case by case mostly.
Yeah.
With us, with Bethlehem, it just felt like the right thing to do to, you know, make most of the choices. I don't think we had anybody helping us really. We called in Johnny's sisters to play strings on it, who are also joining us on the 25th this week at the Ellen, which is awesome. But then we also called in, like, we should get, I think I suggested Mike Parsons, and Johnny was like, yeah, who is this guy?
I've not met him yet, and I'm just like, this guy made the record.
You know,
the bass and banjo and
his fiddle.
Fiddle.
He did fiddle on Scene of Light, which that was the original reason to get him, was his
do some fiddle.
Old time fiddle playing just lifts that song. And then he's like, wow, you want some upright and some banjo? One man band right there.
But the kind of player that, I mean, he did it also after the fact. So we did it live, and then he came in, and you can't tell he's wasn't there. You know?
It's like just
he's
fit
a
right
part
into
of
it.
The instruments.
Yeah. And,
But I was going to say about the producer thing, like it reminds me, like the quality of a great producer, and we're fortunate to have Dan Wilson produce the last two major kind of studio records that we did. But the thing that he does that is so amazing, that gets away from the sort of putting your thumb down on the scale kind of thing, is it's not even really possible for him, because he's got so much patience. And what he does is he sort of poses these, it's almost like koans or something. Like you have a dilemma with the song, and he's like, you know, this is a problem, or, you know, what's this line doing here? Is there a better line? And then he won't say, well, he's a songwriter, you know, he wrote Someone Like You with Adele, and, you know, Not Ready to Make Nice with the Dixie Chicks, you know, and on and on. And, but he wouldn't say it himself. Like I often would get the sense like he actually has an idea, but he's waiting for us to make it ours.
Right.
You know? And that to me is like a really special quality, because it takes like not having, it's just like the most important thing is getting the greatest thing out, not my idea across or my stamp on it. You know, it's like, what do these guys what's the best record that these guys can make on their own almost.
You know, it's like
it's this weird, and I just really appreciated just his almost, I mean, it wasn't hands off. It was very attentive, but it was silent almost.
And almost just like,
here's a space where we're just only going to be, you guys need to figure this out right now.
And it might something needs to happen hours, here, but you guys, it's your job to figure out.
Right. So a lot of times working with Dan, it's like you're just sitting, the three of us were sitting in the living room for literally just staring at the ceiling in silence for hours, you know, and it's just really nice just to have cogitating. That space, you know,
yeah.
Like we have to figure out that word or that line. It's very empowering too for the artists because you sort of realize that it's all in you already.
Right.
You don't need... So it's like we're not like working with him because we have to have him, but it's a helpful just context or
right. It's a tool to just help you extract things from yourself that maybe are tricky to get out.
Yep, and then the other huge thing with a producer in our case is just you have to have a tiebreaker.
yeah
and somebody just say like, I think you're being a little harsh on, you know, your judgment of this song, or you know, like you should listen to that again, like it's okay,
just like re-present the opportunities, the possibilities.
The classic example of that I always bring up is one of Chris's songs, World Go Round, that I just was not liking, and Dan at one point just recorded himself. We had sort of talked about a feel, and then he was like, the reason I think he recorded it was to sort of demonstrate this feel and document it so that we would remember it. But it was like, when I heard him singing it, it's like, suddenly it's not Chris, like my, you know, like partner and brother and like, you know, with all the tensions that we've had growing up, and you know, it's not another one of his songs that has the same, you know, issues that I'm trying to, you know, like that I view differently or whatever.
Yeah.
You know? It's actually like, I mean, context is everything. And when you hear somebody else singing it, then you can hear it, you know?
Yeah.
And it was interesting because it wasn't all that much different. It was just,
and
that taught me a big lesson
that
I wouldn't have learned, you know, if I would have remained, close to it. So this song is actually somewhat seasonal. It was kind of born out of this Scandinavian holiday. It's actually an Italian holiday an Italian saint that was kind of celebrated most in Sweden, but other Scandinavian countries as well, Santa Lucia. And I guess there's a sort of a legend attached with it that there was a famine, and on this day, which according to the old calendar was the shortest day of the year, during this famine, this young woman was seen, you know, approaching the village with a basket of, you know, hot cross buns, like bread, like warm bread, you know, during this time of famine.
Sustenance.
And
it's like the vision,
right? And so but I worked in a daycare in Norway. I was over there for a year in 98, and learned about the way that they celebrate it, and so how they do it at the daycare is all the parents show up that day and sit in this dark room, and the kids form a train, and they pick a girl every year to be the Santa Lucia, and she wears a halo or sort of like a crown of Christmas lights, usually, so, you know, traditionally it would be candles. And is supposed to lead this train into the dark room and bring the light and the joy and the happiness on the darkest day of the year. And so I was in the back room with the kids getting them ready, and the Santa Lucia that was chosen that year was just bawling her eyes out about something or other, and you know, didn't want to go out there, and just, you know, it just struck me that, you know, your job is to bring the happiness of the joy, and you're crying. I thought a lot about depression and stuff as well, because the light in the northern climes, you know, is very important. And so the darkest day of the year is also the point at which every day is going to be brighter from then on out. And but yeah, so song called Well of Sorrow.
fell in your well of sorrow. You were radiant, all in white array. Blonde braided hair and burning flame halo. I saw through the whole charade. Your red sash and your robe.
Rage Against the Night, but don't get caught up in it.
Yeah.
Remember the light while you're raging.
Right. Mm-hmm. Should we do another one?
Sure.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Great. Do you want to do that one? The Branch of Jesse?
I'm up for it.
Great. Yeah, this is the first song on Bethlehem, and it's from the book of Isaiah, and there's child mentioned in this piece that Christians hear and think of Jesus and a sort of like foreshadowing, a foretelling of what's to come. I spoke to an Isaiah scholar some time ago that was talking about how the Hebrew people probably were hearing the name of Moses in that, or the putting that figure was a representation of Moses, and it was kind of a reminder of where they'd been, you know, that at one point, you know, basically everything hung on the life of this baby put into a basket and floated down the Nile, and it's such a tenuous kind of like point in their history, you know, in their sort of story, their cultural story, and this very important figure that, you know, ended up leading them out of slavery, and so it's interesting to think how, I guess, one song or one passage can kind of represent different things to different people, you know, and maybe not be totally, maybe they're not totally contradictory, even though they at first seem to be. It can be both people, maybe.
Yeah.
Represented there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Then a shoot will spring out from the branch of Jesse. From its root will bear fruit, and the spirit of Elohim will rest on him. Leopard will lie down with the goat. The wolf will lie down with the lamb. The ox and the lion will graze together. And a little child will lead them. On that holy hill there will be nothing harmful or evil. The world will be as full of the knowledge of Elohim as the waters cover the sea. Leopard will lie down with the goat. The wolf will lie down with the lamb. The ox and lion will graze together. And a little child will lead them. And a little child will lead them.
It's quite a way to kick off the album.
Thanks.
Now let's listen to one more cut off of the album Bethlehem. Here's High Road.
I wanna take the righteous
That was High Road, a cut off the album Bethlehem. So Friday night at the Ellen Theater, 7:30, and you will be joined by some special guests.
Right. My sisters are going to be playing strings.
I think they played strings when you guys played out at the fairgrounds
right.
a couple of years ago, right?
Yep.
Yeah, in 2019 for our 30th year career anniversary.
Yeah, that was quite a show.
That was a celebration. Was
When you guys were young, did you play music together quite a bit? Or?
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah, we started out in choir, I guess. And Chris was in band and I was in orchestra, and then we were both in choir by junior year.
Yeah, we would jam our own stuff in the choir rooms after hours quite a bit.
Yeah.
And on each other's parents, respective parents' front porches and back decks and stuff.
Pianos.
Did your sisters get involved at that time, or were they?
Not with us, but I was doing all kinds of musical stuff with my sisters and my dad. We do like a piano string quartet kind of thing, and then Heidi did over the years. Heidi's played a lot on our
she's played on a couple albums, right?
Yep. Written Cello. And arranged and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, in the last few years they've really taken a deep interest, and they've mm-hmm. written a lot of parts for not just the Bethlehem stuff but a lot of our other songs.
It's been really fun to shake it up.
And then
to play with my main influences, you know, like they're really the reason I started into music, or was given that kind of like support, you know, watching them, and this is how you practice, and this is how you get over your agony about having to practice.
Right on. Good examples.
Yeah, it turns out for a lot of people that's not a natural thing to want to do.
No.
It takes a little bit of willpower and sometimes a little bit of encouragement and help. And
yeah, some broken violins along the way.
And so you guys will be doing that show, and then you're doing a few more shows in December.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Yeah, we're hitting the road for a week or two, right?
Yeah, heading out to the Midwest and Madison and...
Yeah, Madison, Wisconsin,
Iowa,
next week.
Decorah. Duluth and Minneapolis.
Yeah, we're doing a run, right, Madison, Iowa, on up to Duluth, where we recorded Could It Be, that we played on this show here.
Mm-hmm. Big old Catholic church that was sold for $1 to a music venue. And
this
amazing space. It has like a six and a half second reverb.
Yeah, you know, and you get the big sound in there.
Yeah, yeah, the long tail. Yeah. we have, you know, some Bethlehem holiday type shows coming up on the horizon, and
mm-hmm.
and it'll be good to start off here in Bozeman.
Yeah.
Hometown crowd, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Get to hang with the hometown people.
Well, last year we played in the Ellen and it felt great. So it's pretty awesome that they're having us back. But yeah, so we'll turn Black Friday into something else.
There you go.
Friday.
Yeah, go from the morning of like the ultra crass commercialism to an evening of contemplative music where you should be turning in and looking at yourself and maybe getting away from all of that commercialism and thinking about the real meaning of things.
Oh yeah. Hey,
thinking about how many, you know, CDs you're gonna buy for Christmas gifts.
Yeah, there too. Yeah, we'll bring some
there will be a merch booth out in the lobby for people.
Music and sweatshirts. We should do slippers.
Right. There you go. Yeah, tis the weather. And you guys said you're doing Story Hill Fest again next summer.
Yeah, we are.
And
we're about to announce tickets. And that's in central Minnesota, kind of north central Minnesota.
On a lake.
Third weekend in August, 24th, I guess.
25th. But yeah, it's a really cool camp.
Yeah, we bring in, it's focused on singer-songwriters, and the whole idea is if you like our music, you know, chances are good you're going to love what we love, you know? And yeah. And so we're bringing in, you know, whoever we're kind of listening to or into and...
Or discovering,
yeah. It's totally worked out. I mean, that's been really cool to see the artists. A lot of the people that come to the fest have their own concert series or else have enough pull and sway in their own towns and stuff. And so a lot of the artists get to play a lot of shows after that, from those connections that they made and stuff. So it feels good to be able to.
Yeah. It's really interactive. The crowds that come and the audiences stay in camp and interact, get to know everybody.
Right.
And then, so there's like the whole stage performance type, what you'd expect thing. Plus there's a lot of interactive workshops and then these campfires at night.
Yeah.
Where it's just like really organic.
Kind of the festival jam and scene at night. Yeah. And
pass the guitar, awesome. You know.
It's like, full day of music. And then it's sort of awe-inspiring because it's like you just expect like people are going to tire of this at some point, you know, right. But they're at the end of the day, a full day of music. It's just like everybody's at the fire.
Still going. Yeah.
Yeah. And then like this year anyway, especially, but most of my years, this is our 14th one, and it feels like you're in this kind of magical, like somehow it just takes a vibe or energy on an envelope and you're in the Store Hill envelope for a few days, mm-hmm. Store Hill Fest. And then you leave, and it's you're still in it, like mentally or psychologically. Yeah. It takes me about a week to kind of even want to
re-emerge into the humdrum world, the mundane world.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you for having me out and playing music, and looking forward to Friday night. And
thanks.
Should be a lot of fun.
All right.
And I hope people show up and listen and think. All right. Well, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
KGVM.
Yeah.